You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Well, welcome back, everybody, to the program. And as we said during the first hour, things are getting weird out there, but there are a great number of conferences and events that are sprouting up across America and around the world, a simultaneous uprising, as it were, this summer. And as we said at the top of the show, beginning tonight and for the next 2 weeks here on TPC, we're going to be talking to a variety of speakers and attendees of these inspirational events, and I think that their testimonies are going to be of some encouragement to you. Welcome back to TPC. James Edwards, Keith Alexander, live with you this Saturday evening, June the 17th. And with us now is a gentleman, Austin, who is making a first-time appearance on the program. And I had the opportunity to meet Austin at the Countercurrents events that I spoke at in Atlanta last fall. And he had the opportunity to attend an astounding event. And we'll let him tell you a little more about it after we first introduce him to you. Austin is a white advocate from the Deep South. He spends his free time volunteering for the pro-white movement and developing his fitness and skills to secure a future for our people. And I'm sure we can all agree with that. Austin, how are you doing tonight?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on, Mr. Edwards. Look forward to chatting.
Well, we're looking forward to chatting with you and learning more about your trip to Europe, which I'm sure you just returned home from. What did people miss out on last weekend?
Yeah, so fantastic event. I'll try to give you kind of a comprehensive statement of my analysis of it. I thought it was definitely worth going. I thought it was one of the best events that I've gone to. So I'll talk to you a little bit about security, how it was organized, the format and content of the actual discussion, some of the other outcomes. So in terms of security, I thought that Countercurrents has in the past and continued to strike an appropriate balance between security and accessibility. I think there's a tendency in our movement to be overly paranoid based on the actual risk that we're taking. And Countercurrents is really, you know, hitting that right on the mark. So they're not hamstringing themselves, and yet they're not making themselves too accessible. And I think that that leads to high quality people and a good number of people attending their events. In terms of organization, I thought that the event was well organized in the sense of, you know, just the basics, right? Sticking to your time hacks, getting people where they need to be when they need to be there. That organization helped to facilitate a really effective discussion. Speaking of which, the format and content of the discussion was very pertinent to where our movement is. The topic for debate or the topic for discussion was really this concept of nationalism versus imperialism. That is to say, do we want to stay in a kind of state where each of the distinct white nations, and they're more distinct in Europe, of course, have autonomy, or do we want to move towards a more collectivized white super state? There was a debate featuring Gregory Hood, who's well known in the movement, and of course, Dr. Johnson of Countercurrents on this topic, where Dr. Johnson held the position of ethno-nationalism, and Gregory Hood held the position of imperialism, if you want to call it that. And of course, there's some debate about those terms, of course. But it was a really good debate. I thought that it sparked a lot of good discussion. And it was good that the Countercurrents staff basically took a poll beforehand and after the discussion to see where people's minds were at. It was a really good participatory exercise. So I thought that discussion, the main core of it was very good. And of course, there were other discussions. You know, they talked about culture. There were some other panels, but that was really the crux of the event. There were some other outcomes I just wanted to briefly mention. So for example, I think that was the first time in my life that I ever saw in person what we've lost and you know, what we could stand to gain. And I think that for any white advocate, visiting Europe is a extremely extremely important experience that will make you much more dedicated to the task at hand. And I think, Yes, sir. Go ahead.
I just want to interrupt, if you don't mind, there, Austin. You're giving an excellent report. And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, I have heard nothing. Now, I had the opportunity to meet this gentleman, as I mentioned, last fall, but I have heard nothing but rave reviews about his talent and what contributions he's going to be providing the calls for decades to come for people like Sam Dixon and others. But Cyan, the program director at Countercurrents, who is, of course, a big help to Greg Johnson and a friend of ours, sent me pictures from the area, some of the places that were in the area that you she visited outside of the conference. And to your point, Austin, just seeing the pictures, and I told her this, the pictures of the landscape and some of the castles and just some of the areas around where this conference was held in Eastern Europe were so beautiful. Just to see a picture of them, I said, Cyan, that picture alone reminds me of what we're fighting for. That beauty, that region, that land.
In many ways, Eastern Europe is unspoiled compared to Western Europe, with all the progressivism and postmodern architecture and things. I'm sure Eastern Europe must be like a breath of fresh air.
The mountains. I mean, literally the mountain air. But, pardon the sidetrack there, Austin. But, yes, I mean, you were there. You felt it. You saw it. You experienced it in the flesh. But just seeing a picture, I said, this really reminds me of what we're fighting for, what we're fighting to preserve.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, it was like a spiritual experience in every sense of the word. And in terms of beauty, I think a lot of people, when they think about Europe, they think about the, the architecture, the signs of the glorious past. But what was really the most beautiful thing for me was the people, the biological entity of the white race and its state in that part of the world. You do see the first signs of degradation brought on by Zog in that region, but they're very minimal. And so it's almost like a blast from the past that I never could have otherwise experienced because of when I was born. You really have these people that are not destroyed by drugs, that are not degraded by the progressive, tide, that are not turned into disgusting, blob people, androgynous people. You can't even tell their gender. It was really.
They have a sense of. Excuse me, Austin. Let me just. This is Keith Alexander. Let me.
Yes,
do they have a sense of racial solidarity?
More or less than what you see in America. By the way, Jay and Liz, if you don't mind, let's skip the break this segment because we've only got Austin for a few more minutes, and I want to take full advantage of that. We'll skip this break that we would have taken right now. Yeah. So to Keith's question, Austin, please. Compared to an American, did you see any more of that?
I would say this. The term racial solidarity has a little bit of a different context in Europe than it does in North America and the diaspora at large. I would say that they have more nationalism than we do because they are more real nations, right? They are more tightly grouped genetic clusters, but they absolutely do have racial solidarity. What I would say is that in North America, even leftists who hate us, who hate themselves, they do, in a sense, have racial solidarity. It's just a negative sense of race, right? They know what the white race is. They just hate it because they've been trained to by Jews. So I think that there is a lot of racial solidarity in both locations. It's just that in Europe, it's less negative, at least in the part where I was.
You're right. I mean, that is something that you have to remember about the European nations. They go back a long, long, long time of farther than the American experience does, and so nationalism
over
there.
They don't really have the sense of being white so much as they have a sense of being Hungarians or Poles.
And this is a problem. This is a blessing and a curse. I mean, you have the problems between the Serbs and the Croats, for instance, and we got to get past all of that. But that I think that, again, goes back to the big debate between Gregory Hood and Greg Johnson about the ethno-nationalism versus imperialism. But anyway, getting back to the conference at large. Now, tonight, the VDARE conference is being held. So next week, we're going to have, we mentioned this earlier, Mark Weber and Roger Devlin. Mark Weber spoke at the Skanza Forum up in Estonia. Roger Devlin was all around Europe. They're both going to be on to continue what Austin is planting for us tonight, what he is starting tonight. They will finish next week talking about a variety of events both semi-public and entirely private, that are happening around the world this summer, and in fact, this month. So this is exciting. But again, some of these are very private, as this one was. You had to be in the know to know. Do you think in some ways, Austin, that this censorship that we are that we are faced, this oppression, this repression, it almost reminds me like the early church in a way. You had to have you had to be underground. But I think in a sense, this difficulty is necessary for our movement. It really goes back to our people's growth to begin with. The European winters, the harsh reality of that climate, to forcing us to become innovative and nimble. I think that is there in any way, do you see the problems that we face in terms of deplatforming and censorship and so on and so forth being a blessing to our ingenuity and our ways to adapt and move forward as a people and as a cause?
Yeah, it's not just ingenuity. It's also toughness. I think that we have already gotten tougher. The weak are already being filtered out of our movement, which is good. And at the same time, our movement is growing. I think tougher people are coming into our movement. And, you know, it brings up the discussion of, like, what should we be doing, right? What should we be able to do? And I don't want to sidetrack too much. But my answer in short is absolutely, we need suffering. As much as it sucks, it does
yes.
make us tougher, and it weeds out the
world. Yes. No, I mentioned that. I say that a lot. That's actually one of my mantras. Our people need to suffer a little bit more. Suffering binds people together. It hardens them. It separates the wheat from the chaff and so on and so forth. But the reason I brought up this question, Austin, is because to me, I am seeing things now. I'm 20 years in this movement, come very nearly, a little bit longer than that, but on the radio at least, nearly 20 years. And I'm seeing greater fruit being produced now, even in this age of censorship, the likes we have never seen before. I am seeing more, like, for instance, Peter Brimelow couldn't have a conference at all these hotels. He's having a wonderful event at a castle tonight, his own castle. This Countercurrent events, by the way, speaking of Countercurrents, they are the latest. The great Spencer J. Quinn has written a wonderful review of our new book, The Honorable Call. That was up at Countercurrents a couple of weeks ago. He joins Roger Devlin and Sasha Rossmuller and Clyde Wilson and so many others who have reviewed the books. And we want to thank Greg and Countercurrents for that. But I'm seeing a lot of things happening, a lot of events now, and the professionalism of these events, the seriousness of these events. It seems as though we have taken a step to the next level.
To be flowering, a new awakening, basically.
Even in light of all of these obstacles.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the next stages of our movement will include the creation of infrastructure to support our efforts, and the removal of ineffectual leadership and the supplanting of that ineffectual leadership with better people. I think those are the things that our movement will do in the next decade.
Because you look at Countercurrents, you look at Amarin, you look at VDare, you look at what we've been able to do, and so many others. I don't want to leave anybody out. Anybody who's ever been featured on this program is worthy of your support. They have done work that is worthy of adulation and to be noticed. So I'm not playing favorites, but I'm just thinking about some of the top-tier organizations. I mean, there are others. I hate to do a list because people are going to say, well, you didn't mention me, and I'm not singling anybody out or leaving anybody out. But I'm just saying the work being done collectively, our entire collective, the people featured on this program, the people that we network with, the people that we all network with in our greater universe, is certainly rising. Now, back to this event. We're not going to tell people the exact location. We will say that it was in Eastern Europe. It was in a mountainous area. There were castles, just beautiful landscape. Beautiful architecture, beautiful people, reminding us of what we're fighting to preserve. What else can you share with us, Austin, without giving away too many details, perhaps some of the other speakers who can be named, or any other takeaways from those of us who were not there but would have loved to have been, make us jealous?
Sure. I'll share two more short things. So the first was an event that really affected me personally on an emotional level that I just wanted to share. I was in a European town, and I just happened upon a folk music concert. And, you know, they had basically some violins playing, and they had the local townspeople there. And I just saw their children dancing and laughing and dancing to violins with their families, and just having a beautiful wonderful, wholesome time. And I don't know what to tell you. It brought a tear to my eye, because that is something that we are going to have to go through hell to get that again, but it is absolutely worth it. So I just wanted to share that, because it really had a profound effect on me. And I don't think I'll ever forget that.
You're a young guy.
That I
yeah, go ahead.
To,
go ahead. Go ahead. Keep going.
I am.
Well, no, I'll go ahead and ask the question. That is not a detriment, by the way. I was 19 when I got started. I've been in this my whole adult life. But I think between the three of us, you've got Keith as the elder statesman here tonight. You've got me, middle-aged, firmly middle-aged, turning 43 next week. You're younger than that. So we're looking at this from three different generations. And you're hopeful. I'm hopeful. Yeah. Keith is hopeful.
Where do you see?
And tell us the second takeaway. You were about to say something else, and I interrupted you. But tell us your thoughts on having a positive outlook, even amongst all of this, as we said earlier, this cultural rot and degeneracy and everything that we're seeing coming out of the system and the powers that be. What are those reasons for hope and optimism? And then give us your second takeaway.
I am an extreme realist, what most people would call a pessimist, and yet I'm still optimistic about our chances. I would say we have definable advantages that will help us. I think one of those is that the U.S. federal government is failing. That is a boon for us, because it will create a power vacuum that a relatively small number of extremely dedicated, fanatical believers in the cause will be able to capitalize on. We have to ensure that we're in the position to be able to capitalize on such opportunities. That's where our work comes right now. So I think we do have the revolutionary capability based on the time period that I see us in history. So I do think that history is going to say they were small, they were few. And during the time of great chaos, they capitalized on it. That's my optimism. I'm not going to pretend that we're not going to suffer. We absolutely are. But I think that we will do very well.
Finish that, please.
Go ahead, sir.
No, by all means, you tell us your second point.
Yeah, my second point is that to anyone, I guess in the diaspora listening or Europeans, we are in the same fight. So I went to numerous European countries. In every case, it is Jewish rule originating from Washington, D.C. and Hollywood and their foot soldiers. And their foot soldiers look the same and they act the same. Antifa is the same in every white country that I visited. It is the same situation on the ground. So regardless of any tendencies towards ethno-nationalism, we are facing the same threat and we have to respond collectively. That's my second point, sir.
Austin, this is Keith again. I think that Zog has made a real bad misstep with Ukraine, and it has basically drawn back the curtain and shown a very ugly spectacle to the rest of the world about what the so-called progressive West is really all about. And you said that misstep is a great opportunity. Now the big question is, are we going to have what it takes to step into that vacuum and basically direct the course of the white race in Europe and in the Anglosphere and elsewhere in the diaspora, as you said, and be in control, or will there be another group to step in place of the, you know, the Zog, as you call it, that will, be in charge of our destinies?
Well, while he's mulling that over, I would remind everybody that we're talking with Austin here, who was an attendee just last Saturday, in fact, while we were on the air. He was over in Eastern Europe with the Countercurrents European Conference, a summer conference. Wonderful event by all accounts. Sam Dixon called me from Europe to report on it, said it was a wonderful event. As I would have expected it to be, having attended one last fall here in the States. But we talked about the suffering, Austin, how necessary it will be for our people to be hardened before that victory can come. But I do, God help me, so much of my naivete has been zapped of me. My youthful exuberance, well, I'm still exuberant, but my youthful naivete is gone. But I still believe that they can fall. I still believe that our people are going to win. I believe it with the very fiber of my being. Do you believe that?
I do, 100%.
Big question is this, guys. See, I've seen it all, and I remember this is the new group that's going to really lead us into the promised land. And then you look back two or three years and say, where'd all these people
go? It's never hard enough for them. I mean, that's the thing. It's got to get harder first. I mean, we're never going to win with too many of our people being comfortable. And that's something I say that as a husband or a father. Certainly, I don't want my wife or children to ever have to suffer. But we have to be real. Nobody, if people are relatively content, they're not going to take the kind
This is a rare opportunity. This is an opportunity that we haven't seen before in, I think, our lifetimes, any of us here. And this is, you know, it's just going to be a matter of whether or not we've got what it takes to take over.
Well, we will see. Austin, I want to thank you for the excellent report from Eastern Europe. You're back home safe and sound. You're going to be hearing a lot more about this gentleman as the years go on from everything that I've heard. And I want to thank you for giving us a few minutes tonight. We wanted somebody to report on that. Greg's, of course, still in Europe, and Cyan's at VDAIR conference tonight. So thanks for filling in and doing a bang-up job, if I do say so myself. We appreciate it. Thanks again. Look forward to seeing you again. And pretty good first-time appearance, if I do say so myself, Keith.
Oh, absolutely. And it's, you know, it's hopeful, and we need to keep hope alive, is the left is always saying. We really have an opportunity here, and it's not to be belittled. We need to make sure that we make the most of it.
I wanted to make the point with him that, again, as it seems to get tougher and we begin to be pushed back further and further against the wall, not being able to take online donations and all these other things, we still have this chance, and the chance is growing. We'll be back.
Exposing corruption, informing citizens, pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA News, I'm Jerry Barmash. President Biden said the reopening of Interstate 95 in northeast Pennsylvania is the country's most crucial project.
Biden, joined by Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro and other state leaders, updated the public on the reconstruction efforts in Philadelphia.
To the people of Philadelphia, I want to say that we're with you, we're going to stay with you, and this is rebuilt until it's totally finished. We're going to try to do that as quick a time as possible.
Governor Shapiro then promised,
I can state with confidence that we will have I-95 reopened within the next 2 weeks.
The closure occurred due to a bridge collapse caused by a tanker truck fire last Sunday. I'm John Schaefer.
While in Philadelphia on Saturday, Biden kicked off his re-election campaign. The event was held just a day after Biden was endorsed by the AFL-CIO. Some chaotic moments at one of the nation's busiest airports.
TSA agents clearing the terminals at Los Angeles International Airport after a suspicious package called in. The item found around 9:30 Friday night in a public area before you get to the security checkpoints. The LAPD bomb squad, along with many officers, were on scene investigating. The units clearing the package, saying it was not a threat. But the situation creating a huge traffic jam at LAX leading up to the airport as the arrivals and departure decks were both temporarily shut down. I'm Laura Winters.
Russian President Vladimir Putin said his deployment of nuclear weapons in Belarus is a warning to the West. He added, it's a reminder to the West that it could not, quote, inflict a strategic defeat on Russia. The Justice Department is filing a protective order to stop former President Trump from releasing classified documents. The order will be reviewed by a judge and would allow Trump to only review the 31 documents with his attorneys. This is USA News.
Greece is cheap.
But the airfare costs a fortune.
Paris?
Not much closer. And again, airfare.
What about Puerto Vallarta?
Let's face it, flying anywhere is just too expensive.
Wait, what's this? Low-cost airlines.
With one call to low-cost airlines, you'll drastically slash your travel costs. We're talking insanely low airline prices to any of your favorite destinations. Where would you like to go? London, Rome, Costa Rica, Australia?
Wow, that's cheap.
So why wait? Call now to learn how crazy cheap it is to fly anywhere in the U.S. or international. Our prices are so low, we can't publish them. The only way to get them is to call to instantly hear the most amazing best deals on airline travel. It's that easy. So call now and start packing.
800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. That's 800-215-5141.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Now, we've got a special treat for you. We've got a husband and wife team calling in now. You just heard from Austin, who just got back from Eastern Europe. He was at a Countercurrents summer conference over there. And now Rich and Janice were at the Forest Homecoming. It's an annual event at the Nathan Bedford Forest Boyhood Home. You know Gene Andrews, the caretaker of the Nathan Bedford Forest Boyhood Home. He's a regular guest on our program throughout the year, but a mainstay during Confederate History Month. Well, Rich and Janice are also longtime friends and contributors to the broadcast. Now, Janice, you'll hear often during our Valentine's Day program, but also throughout the year as well. Rich, a regular contributor throughout the year, intermittently. Now, they have been on separately and in tandem. If you'll remember, Keith, a couple of years ago, we had a Ramblin' with the Hamblins special edition of TPC. They were down here in Memphis in the studio with us, and we did the whole 3 hours with them.
Well, they're invaluable to us. They've been around for a long time. They're kind of like our man in Havana, but they're from the Middle Tennessee area, okay? And they're always, you know, giving us great ideas and great content, and we're so happy to have them over at the Forest Home to tell us what happened over there, because as we've mentioned earlier in the show, there's a lot happening. The left is making a lot of mistakes, and this means there are a lot of opportunities for us. Tell us what's going on out there in Middle Tennessee, guys.
Rich, what did you see today? Where did you go?
Well, we went to the, I think this is about the 23rd, 24th edition of the Forest Homecoming, which is always the third weekend in June, at the Forest Boyhood Home in Chapel Hill, where he lived from 1830 to 1833. The house is, as far as we know, it's the only still standing house that the Forest lived in. The state of Tennessee acquired it, I think, back in the late 60s, early 70s, and we're going to incorporate it into Henry Horton Park, and then basically it sat there dormant and slowly deteriorating. And by the early 90s, I think 92 or 93, the legislature, the state of Tennessee, was ready to get rid of it because they were getting a lot of heat from the Tennessee Black Caucus. So they sold it to the Sons of Confederate Veterans, which is headquartered in nearby Columbia, for a dollar, and told them to, you know, take care of it. We're done with it. We're not going to give you any money or anything. It's all yours to play with. And so for the bulk of that time, Gene Andrews, our good friend Gene Andrews, has been volunteering as a caretaker for the home and overseeing the reconstruction of the house. The house is in pretty good shape now. And then the grounds are about 45 acres of land that go with it. It's typical Middle Tennessee land. Is rocky, kind of scrub land, a lot of cedar trees on it. It's not really good for much agriculture. I guess you could graze goats on it or cattle, but it's and as it, no wonder that the Forrest family decided to pull up and move to North Mississippi, you know, after 1833.
Is that the Cumberland Plateau, Richard?
No, it's not the plateau. It's Middle Tennessee. It's southern Middle Tennessee, very close to Murfreesboro. And if you're familiar with the Battle of Murfreesboro, and if you've been to the park down there, they call it, the Yankees call it Stone's River. It's a lot of exposed limestone, rock, cedar thickets, and that kind of stuff. It's pretty flat around there where we were. But it's we've seen it change from a absolutely rural area, and at which time, you know, the Forest Home was about the only thing out there, to it's being subdivided around it as, of course, you know, the urban sprawl continues and people flood into Tennessee, and they're looking for places to build houses. But what's going on today was the homecoming is primarily a fundraiser for the restoration efforts there at the Forest Home, and they've in the last few years they've commenced the construction of a visitor center that's going down there, and they've got the slab poured and some of the plumbing roughed in and all that kind of stuff, and they're raising money to pay for it as they go, and it's going to be a pretty nice facility. There'll be meeting rooms there, and they hope to have be able to have weddings and stuff there too. They have had weddings at the Passage Port.
They have already had several weddings there.
Yeah, so today was a day full of spectators. There were Southern vendors, a lot of the SEV camps from the area set up booths there. They had a silent auction with a lot of donated goods. We had artillery demonstrations, infantry demonstrations, and also cavalry demonstrations. So it was music. I think Donnie Kennedy of the Kennedy Brothers from the South is Right spoke this morning. And then also the Mr. Hill, who's been on the cesspool,
that's right, the
Senator AP Hill. He gave a long talk there too. So there was quite a bit of activity there. You'll be interested to note that the Forest Park granite sign that used to sit in Memphis is now gracing the front entrance of the Forest Home.
Well, you know, that was the excuse
that they used. About that. They've got former Forest Park is covered up with tents for Juneteenth coming up, of all things. But
well, the general himself is in a much better place now in every way imaginable. But I had the opportunity to go up there and was with both Rich and Janice and Gene Andrews and General and Mrs. Forrest themselves. I was about as far from the casket that contained the remains of General Forrest as I am from you right now, Keith, on September the 16th, 2021, at Forrest's most recent burial. And it's a beautiful grounds there that Gene Andrews keeps at the boyhood home. Born in Chapel Hill, which is very near where the
well, you know, the peregrinations of the remains of General Forrest and his wife are indicative of white flight. You know, it used to be that Memphis was a really great place for people that, you know, would be supporters of General Forrest and the Confederacy and the Sons of Confederate Veterans and whatnot. But as white people moved out, when school integration really started to take hold, white people moved out, and the people that were left had no respect for the Confederate heritage. And I think it's the best of a bad situation that we have gotten Forrest and his remains and his statue and everything else out there in rural Middle Tennessee.
Because, well, you know, we've got to see the disgrace and the injustice, but it's true. And I want to skip this break to Jay and Liz so we can keep Rich and Janice. I don't want to give Janice a little more time. But you have to move. White flight, you thought, was just for the living.
Now for the dead as well.
But it's a beautiful monument there as you go into the grounds. He rode from here into the legend of the land, and surely he did. And Janice, what did you see today? What are your takeaways from the event?
Well, Richard may or may not agree with me, but I saw that this was one event of other than your anniversary parties that did have a number of younger people at it. You know,
wonderful
people that were of childbearing age and actually had some children, and you know, you don't normally, you know, there's none at the SCV. Barely at the League of the South. You know, it's just really hard to see young people getting involved in anything like that. So for me, that's what I saw, you know, with younger families and them getting to actually look around and listen, because they, you know, like you said, there were speakers and there was demonstrations, and so there was a lot of things to do for them, you know, to look around and see. So, but
Do you think the SCV is growing, Janice?
Yeah.
What, Keith?
Do you think the SCV is growing? Do you think we're getting a new generation of people that are interested in this?
They're not going to the SCV. That's the problem. They're not going to the SCV. They'll come to an event like this if they want the truth about history, but they're not going to the SCV. And that's a sad thing, you know.
Go ahead.
Yes.
Well, I was just going to say, anybody who's had any deal, I appreciate the SCV in theory, but there's some differences. Let's just put it that way. For anybody that's a member, keep your membership.
Yeah, but definitely, there's differences, and they don't seem to really, they don't want to stand up for anything. Unfortunately, is the big thing. You know, they don't want to stand up for things, and it's really kind of hard to, actually deal with them if they don't want to do that. You know?
Well, we've had some interesting
Let me say it's not entirely true. They stand up for. Yeah, there's some good people in the SCB, but
there are some good people. Yeah,
there are.
It's interesting. It's good people. I mean, I love the flag raisings. I mean, there is good that is done from that organization. Overall, it's a net positive, but there are some differences when it comes to racial realities. That
there were disappointment, particularly in the Forest fight that we had.
Well, our personal
A lot of disappointments in a lot of places, like the Lee statue in Charlottesville and the Lee statue in New Orleans, and I know there are some
committed pro-white partisans that are still a part of the organization. I won't name names. There's a certain attorney.
Oh yeah, we saw a lot of. We saw a lot of.
Yeah, that's right. There are some.
Yeah, there's a lot of them there today.
Well, let's talk more about the event. So that's sort of what we're doing tonight and next week. We're showcasing events here and abroad that are bringing people in that are. A part of our cause and our collective. How many people would you say showed up today to this annual fundraiser to support the Nathan Bedford Forrest Boyhood Home and to help expand the facilities there? You shared a little bit about some of the presentations. What was the and that there was a diversity in terms of age of the crowd. How many people would you say were there?
Not as many as in previous years.
Yeah, there wasn't as many. It's true. I mean, there was enough, I guess, and it was a very diverse. I mean, you had old people like us all the way down to babies.
That's good. That's wonderful.
Now, of course, a lot of the young crowd was made up of Rick Tyler and his brood.
I knew I forgot something.
Now I understand.
That would definitely skew the demographics there. But that's the thing I forgot. Yeah, Thank you, Rich, because Janice had mentioned Rick Tyler, and I meant to follow up. Was he there? What was going on with that?
Rick is definitely one of a kind.
I'm glad he showed up. He brought
most of his family there. I mean, there's a whole bunch of one. His son Nathan's got, what is it, Janice? 9 or 10
or 11? Nine or ten is what Abigail said.
Rick Tyler's about as close to Genghis Khan as we've got.
he's gonna outdo the Duggars before it's all over.
I think he has.
Yeah, well, let's not get deep into that. But we saw a lot of old. We saw a lot of old friends there, people that we've been associated with for the last 30 years. So it's, we're all getting older. We're all getting slower. Gene is basically retired from running that event, because he just can't, he's not physically up to it anymore. It takes too much labor and he just doesn't have the.
Well, it's too hot. I mean, let's just face it. I mean, I'm looking at the picture Gene. Oh, it's a big, it's an expansive area. It's a lot of acreage. I know Gene, when I'm talking about caretaker, he doesn't change the light bulbs and sort of like set an administrative office. He cuts the grass and he does all of the hard work.
Right. Yeah. And that was his primary duty this year was cutting the grass. He says, I'm not doing anything else with this event, but I'm going to make sure that grass is cut. So, and that part pulled off. But, like I say, I don't think it was as widely advertised as it has been in the past, but I mean, it's a lot of things going on. I mean, I'm not going to be a happy warrior about all this kind of stuff because, you know, we're still a movement in retreat. And I think you're right, James, that we got to suffer a lot longer or a lot more before people eventually catch on. But, for instance, there was a black Confederate there and, you know, he had his
he's there.
The SCV did show up. The SCV was there today.
Yeah, well, the SCV was there. The headquarters tent was there, and of course, I won't say that, but it was a little bit different this year than it had been in the past. It's like I say, it wasn't quite as big, I don't think, but I don't think they pushed it quite as much. Just like the viewing of the caskets of General Ms. Forrest.
Well, see, that's the thing.
Really,
I mean, you're telling
they were,
me
they were afraid. Good... They were afraid a big crowd
would
show up.
I remember all of that.
Yeah,
I remember being
there's that kind of noise
upset.
Going on.
Okay, so that's the thing. I mean, you're telling me there was a good crowd.
It was a Yeah, it was a decent crowd. It was a beautiful day. Not too hot, not terribly hot. There was gorgeous a nice day. Little breeze the whole time.
There was a nice silent
auction with a lot of items for sale. And Janice, why don't you tell them about what you picked up?
I picked up a dress that I'm there that actually supposedly was worn by our President McKinley's daughter who died at age 5. And I went on the internet to see if he really had a daughter, and he did, that she died at 5. And the picture they had, the dress she had on looked a lot like the dress I bought.
Wow.
So it was cool.
Rich, you cut the check for that, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't that expensive, but it was a rare find. It was a rare find.
No,
I mean,
no
kidding. It was a beautiful
little
piece.
I mean, it's just gorgeous.
Handmade. It was framed, and it was kind of a nice thing. There were books and other stuff for sale there, and so it was a pretty good fundraiser.
There's vendors, there's treats, there's speakers,
yes.
And it's all raising money to help maintain the grounds there of the Forest Boyhood Home, born not far from there in Chapel Hill, Tennessee, right around the corner, and then, of course, spent those years in his adolescence there. And from there, he wrote into the pages of history, as the sign says there at the gates. But and they are expanding the facilities. They want to put in a meeting room and things like that. Gene Andrews, the real deal. Gene is one of the true believers, one of the best of the best. And so you're saying, of course, it wasn't the biggest crowd they've ever had, still a very respectable crowd. And some of that goes back to not publicizing it. Now, that went back to the forestry interment. Mm-hmm. Now, when I was at the Hunley burial in Charleston, that was a lifetime ago in terms of the rot that has set in since the early 2000s. But you're talking about thousands and thousands and thousands of people that were there. I think that the forest reinterment there in Columbia, Tennessee, not far down the road from the Boyhood Home, would have received thousands of people as well, even in the current year.
Yeah.
Had they advertised
it, could have
been thousands
of the wrong type of people too.
Well, that's what they were afraid of, and that's the point. Like, why are we being afraid? This is our hero. We're going to
honor
him.
That's the problem. They're too timid, and Americans in general, I think, or at least the current crop of Americans aren't. They're not willing to stand up. They're afraid of, the neighbors will say something bad about them, or they'll get kicked off of Facebook, or people at church will shut them.
They'll be called a racist.
If they get associated with, the wrong.
Listen, and not all of that, Rich.
The wrong causes.
Rich, I know you're a man's man, and you're one of the tough guys, and I don't mean that jokingly. You really are. You've paid the price. You've been on the front lines your whole life. We do what we can. There's people like Gene Andrews out there. But, I spoke in Selma at Fort Dixie last year, and the guy who spoke before me was a member of the Alabama State House of Representatives and a Baptist minister. And once they found out that he spoke at Fort Dixie, he was thrown out of the state legislature, or he resigned, and he was thrown out of the Southern Baptist Convention. So, there is a price to be paid. So you got to understand that it's not imagined that these people are facing a price, but it certainly pales in comparison to what our ancestors faced. We got to honor our heroes.
See, I really quite. How can they kick you out of the state legislature?
Well, he resigned.
That's what we've got to get over. Okay?
But he did get kicked out of the church. But so have I.
Yeah.
But now, let me ask you this. I was happy to have put John Hill, who was on the show last week, and we introduced him to the audience back in Confederate History Month, in touch with Gene, and I was pleasantly I was happy that Gene had invited him to speak at this event. How did John Hill's presentation go today?
Well, I think it went pretty well. We were sitting over in the tents by the where the vendors were, so I didn't quite get to hear all of it, but I think he got a warm reception, got applause. Donnie Kennedy also mm-hmm. spoke, and he gave a pretty rousing speech and got a lot of cheers from the audience too. So I think the speakers were well received, and the music was pleasant, and there were I think it was a very good positive crowd, even though it may have been a little bit long in the tooth. But we're all getting older. I mean, that's it. And I appreciate the enthusiasm of young guys, but I was talking about that to Rick, about some people that were in the movement, 5 or 6 years ago, young guys that were fired up and enthusiastic and have disappeared. And I, we both agreed that the, that the a lot
it's
of these
always
guys,
been the way it's been.
They flare up like falling meteors shining bright in the sky, and then they burn up and nobody hears from them again. So I mean,
whatever happened to Hoss Rager? I remember that.
He actually caused some good trouble in the Southern Baptist Convention himself not too long ago. But that's the thing. I mean, it's a lot of
but that's just the way.
A lot of risk and little reward.
I mean, that's just the way it's always been.
Yeah,
it's the way it's always been. I mean, you got to stick with it. And you got to be tough. I mean, it's look how many people faded away from the Confederate Army during the course of the war. And it's when Lee surrendered, he had barely 20 some odd thousand men, but he asked for rations from Grant for 45 because there are that many more that had just melted away into the woods, to escape being destroyed by the Union Army. So it's. Yeah, it's kind of the way of the world. In South Africa, they got the same, the same thing during the Boer War.
I'm glad you mentioned that. I'm glad you mentioned that because I had it down in my notes here to make mention while y'all are on. Janice on Valentine's Day, Rich, you throughout the year. Janice pops up from time to time throughout the year as well. We had that one show in Memphis together here in the studio where we did a full 3 hours together. We called that Ramblin' with the Hamblins. But y'all have also called in. On more than one occasion, live from South Africa to give reports. So I really appreciate y'all, whether it's here or in South Africa or wherever, the role y'all have played on this program, both on the air and behind the scenes. You know how near and dear you are to us. I got to say that publicly. I know you're cringing as I say that, but it is true, and it does come from the heart. Y'all are family. We've got some of Janice's original artwork there on the
up. They can always be counted on. You never have to worry about them disappearing into the woods.
Very good, Keith. Well, what else can y'all tell us with a couple of minutes remaining? Go ahead, Janice.
I was going to say, you have that artwork because the picture, which is much more beautiful than the one I painted, reminded me of Danny.
Wow, thank you very
she's
much.
She's so pretty.
she is, and I will tell her you said that.
James said, what about me?
No, not me. But what else can y'all tell us? Any takeaways? 2 minutes remaining. Take it anywhere y'all want to go.
Well,
takeaways from the event or the cause
at large. Maybe next year we need to have you kind of plug it the week before it's going to happen. Because
well,
I mean,
Eddie
you
wanted
have a
to
lot
come
of
up
Tennessee.
There. Yeah, we should have. I was concerned about getting back in time and not being able to broadcast remotely from the remote location. That Eddie had talked about wanting to come up there, and
I think cell service is pretty good there now. They've got some more towers up, so we didn't have any problem picking up a signal. I listened to Blood River Radio when I was there under the tent.
Yeah, and when we first started going, you couldn't. It was hard, but not anymore.
You dropped a lot.
Interesting. Okay. We'll see.
A couple of things to mention. Like I said, Fort Dixie is coming up, I think, on the 20th of July down in Selma. So people need to be aware of that with Butch and Pat Godwin. Let's see. There's Dixie Republic, the Dixie Fest, coming up the 8th of July next month. You're going to be there. I understand it. Rick and his family is going to be there. There's going to be Mike Hill and Mark Tommy. For the League
Sam
of the South,
Dixon,
are going to be there.
John Hill, who we just mentioned, he'll be back. John's everywhere these days.
Yeah. Well, good for him. And God willing, maybe Simon Roche will make his way from South Africa over here, but I'm not crossing that.
God willing, y'all will be there.
What else? Yeah, if things work out, it sure will. That's about it. Onward and upward,
I guess. Lots of stuff going on. I mean, that's the thing. What you think you know is just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, the iceberg is bigger than the events you hear about, which is, of course, AMRIN. AMRIN is a public event because it could be held at a state park facility. By the way, I'll be there August 11th and 13th. Keith will be there. So come and see us. But that's when you see above the ocean. Now that's above the water. That's AMRIN. A lot of events underneath the water. And thanks to Rich and Janice for shedding light on another one. I hear the music in the background. Love you guys. We'll talk to you again soon. And we'll be back with the third and final hour right after this.